Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Between the Waters, Polish Legacy New Zealand Charitable Trust presents you with the radio broadcast, Polish Waves.
Dzień dobry from Poland. This is Polish Waves, broadcasting on Plains Media 96.9 FM.
We are broadcasting at Canterbury Community Access Radio Station. You've joined us on a journey to learn something about our home country, Poland.
This broadcast is presented by Between the Waters, Polish Legacy in New Zealand Trust, and sponsored by Polish Embassy in Wellington. Thank you. We advocate and promote Polish heritage as part of New Zealand ethnic identity and provide forum to present, share and celebrate Polish uniqueness. You can look us up on Facebook, Polish Legacy in New Zealand. We are also available as podcasts on plains.org.nz. Welcome to our November program. And November is one of those special months in Poland where we reminisce on a lot of things. If you can imagine, it's autumn in Poland. So the days are short, the evenings are long. And November is, in Polish, November means listopad. That's the name of the month. And it is derived from words leaves, autumn leaves, and to fall, listopad. So this is what November is all about in terms of the name. But as I mentioned, we reminisce in November because Poland observes Wszystkich Świętych this month, which is called All Saints' Day. It is a tradition that goes beyond mere remembrance. And we will have more on that with Maria. Also in November, we celebrate Poland's Independence Day, Narodowe Święto Niepodległości, which falls on the 11th of November. It is celebrated hugely across basically the whole world. And just for your information, only a few people know that Poland disappeared from world maps for 123 years and our independence was regained in 1919. But we will have Tom later on in the program on this topic. Also in November, Polish National Theatre celebrates 260 years of existence. We will have Jen covering that topic later on. But first of all, let's look back and reminisce locally here in Christchurch. Last month, our program was devoted to heritage, Polish heritage in New Zealand, and also community heritage as part of ethnic identity of the city. And because October is known to our community, especially here in Christchurch, as the month of Heritage Festival, we thought it will be very special if we will invite someone from Christchurch City Council to talk about Heritage Festival, which has been happening for 30 years, and I'm sure she will tell us all about it. So welcome to the studio this month, Heritage Advisor from Heritage Team of Christchurch City Council, Deborah Cosgrove. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you.
Now, with 30 years of history of this festival, what do you see the importance of celebrating heritage in Christchurch be? What do you think it is?
I think it's the opportunity for groups, individuals, organisations to come together and share the stories that mean something to them and mean something to the city and the identity of the city. So 30 years, it started in 1993, so it's 32 years, but it's 30 years of events because we missed a couple of years after the earthquakes. Mm. And up until 2019, people would have known it as Heritage Week, but since 2019 we changed the name to Heritage Festival because just gave us a bit more flexibility around the time frame that the event could run for. So it prior to the earthquakes, it was like a 10-day week. But since we've got it up and running again, it's been running for about 2 to 2.5 weeks every year.
And yes, the city is definitely buzzing with events of all kind. We participated in a few of those festivals in the past, yes, with various events. But what is the most common heritage theme that you think is coming through in terms of community involvement in the heritage festivals?
Well, each year we do develop a theme for the festival. So most groups that take part, most event providers that take part, do address that theme. So that's a way of keeping the festival fresh to some extent, and that people can change what they're doing to adapt to the theme. So last year it was sport, leisure and recreation. This year it's about building place. So I think people try to frame their event around the theme. So each year events are a little bit different, and sometimes new groups come on board because of the theme. But in terms of, it's very hard to summarise, because every time I say something I think of all the groups that aren't doing that, because there's so many different different groups involved in so many types of events. So there's, you know, there's exhibitions, there's performances, there's walks, there's yeah, talks,
open
there's
days,
open days, there's tours. Yeah, I suppose it's the variety that makes it so much fun, but it also makes it hard to summarise.
And I guess the communities of such a diversity that we actually... You cannot put every a single community into the same pot and get something or the same out of it, type of thing. So we celebrate different things in different ways, and we also have different ways of expressing it and just showcasing that. So, for example, Polish community or us celebrating and participating, we had a concert, we had a movie, we had performance.
Yes. You've had two concerts.
Yeah, so I think it was... Yeah, so I think it depends on how we want to express our ethnicity and our involvement in the community. How many organisations do you think participate on average every year?
Around 50 to 70 event providers take part. So that's individuals. It's also community groups, businesses, larger heritage organisations. So,
yeah. Is there a specific criteria that they need to comply with to be a part of?
No, we have broad objectives, but they have to fill in an application form, and they have to meet and fill out a health and safety plan. But apart from that, if it's talking about or relates to the history, the heritage, the stories of the people and place of the district, or the Selwyn district is also included. So there's no strict criteria.
There was the program this year was quite comprehensive. Are you finding that the program is growing, or that the number of people who want to participate are growing, and what sort of groups do you think they are, or how is it spreading?
Well, I'm hoping that it's growing in terms of awareness of the festival. The model that we're using is sort of constantly changing, because the funding's changing and that sort of thing. So we try to reach as many people as possible. When the festival, in sort of April, before we start the festival, we try to promote that the festival is open and reach a wide group of people. So I think it's probably slightly smaller than last year. But there's some quite big events in it. So the thing about it really is that it's different every year. So and the groups that are involved change every year. And sometimes that is down to the theme. And sometimes it's down to events sort of coming and going in terms of the energy within the group. The energy that goes into producing the events from the community is huge. You know, there's a huge amount of goodwill that really drives the Heritage Festival, because a lot of it's done by volunteers. who put in a lot of time. So, yeah.
And speaking about the themes, Deborah, how do you come up with a theme?
Well, over the course of the year, we get people emailing or talking to people, and we find out, you know, what people are sort of planning in the city going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And we also look at what anniversaries are coming up. So people often let us know if there are anniversaries coming up. And then we sort of use that sometimes as a genesis for the theme. So, for instance, this year there were several sort of anniversaries, 200 years since the birth of Benjamin Mountfort, and anniversaries of significant buildings in the city being built. And then we connect with sort of larger heritage organisations, units within council like libraries who hold the photo hunt. And we just talk through the ideas around the anniversaries, and then that becomes a genesis for a sort of a higher level theme. So, for instance, we were building place because we didn't want it just to be about built heritage. So we sort of look at the anniversaries, then sort of lift it up so that it's quite accessible and inclusive in terms of being open to lots of people.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, we as a community, I guess, we know we can observe what events are there, and we can participate if we wish to. But I wonder what's going behind the scene. How big is the team, heritage team, and what is involved in preparing heritage festival like this?
In terms of the council, the team is pretty small. So it's
just you,
myself, with great assistance from the marketing team at council. And health and safety advisor, and then, but really the real energy comes from the community who are putting on the event. So what the council's contribution is the administrative side of pulling together the program, reviewing the applications, pulling together the program, and then we work out the marketing. So we do a printed guide and we get the events listed on what's on.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the two contributions that council make are the administration and then the marketing of the program as a whole. And then the event providers themselves hold the events, but then they also do their own marketing to sit beside what council does. So we're sort of marketing it at a high level, the whole program. And then the event providers, you know, they know their communities, they know the people that are interested in what they're doing. So the combination of the two layers of marketing can...
Yeah, it's usually very important because you don't know what you don't know. So if you don't know, you cannot attend.
Yeah,
I just wonder if you measure the success in terms of numbers, attending events and stuff. Is there any sort of data on that?
Yes.
Just out of interest.
Yep. After we have finished the survey, we send out a survey to event providers to get some feedback, things that have worked, things that haven't worked, how their numbers have gone, how their events have gone. And so we broadly in the last few years are getting sort of 8,000 to 10,000 people attending the events each year.
So it's happening usually during the Christmas school holidays?
It fluctuates because we traditionally before the earthquakes, the final date of the festival sat on Labor Day, which moves.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we catch the last week of the school holidays. But for instance, this year it sits right outside the school holidays. While our dates remain fairly stable, the school holidays move around. So,
it's certainly a very meaningful platform for communities to express their own identity, and certainly was for us with the Polish community and Polish events that we had in the past and participated in this. I think it's very important because at the end of the day, we try to blend, if you know what I mean, with the community, and but at the same time we want to keep our identity. So the platforms like this, and Krasice Heritage Festival was one, and Plains Media is another one, I have to say.
Yes.
It's actually very very encouraging to make sure that we don't forget who we are and how we came about as part of this community, but also to showcase who we are all about. So that's definitely a gift that we have as a community.
Right.
It is.
Yes, and that, and I find when I get the feedback from various groups, and you say, do you measure it on numbers? We you know, we do look at the numbers, the overall numbers, but often you can get events that are quite small scale but have the quality in terms of the experience that people have had at that event has been very high. So sometimes you can't always measure things by numbers, but just by the feedback that you get from people that have attended or from the event providers themselves in terms of how they feel about the event. And also other feedback that I do get is that, you know, people have enjoyed the event and the event's hopefully been successful, but it's also about the people coming together to hold the event. And sometimes that can be a very meaningful experience for the event providers as well as what they're sharing with other people.
So it works both ways in a lot of the layers. Have you got a favourite event that you attended this year?
Well, I went to a few events. Yes, they were all really good, so it's hard to pick them out. I did go out to the University of Canterbury and have a look at the event that the Disarmament and Security Society put on to acknowledge the 80th anniversary of the atomic bombs. So that was in Japan. So that was quite a moving look at the impact of nuclear war, and also a review of the work that's gone on in Christchurch and nationally in terms of fighting for a nuclear-free
world.
Yeah, not just New Zealand, but world. Yeah. I attended an interesting talk on archaeology, about the archaeology that was discovered on the site of Takaha. So that was interesting because archaeologically, you know, often the digs are on a single site, but that was across multiple sites of people of different sort of economic standards of living and sort of what the artefacts and the layers in the earth showed about how they, you know, dealt with their waste, their water, and also the things that they'd left behind in their rubbish bins. So that was quite fun. And Maria and I both went to the event, Heritage New Zealand Pohara Taonga event at the Arts Centre. Which was a celebration of creative energy that's gone on there for the last 50 years, and also celebrating the project that Heritage New Zealand's working on with the Arts Centre at the moment to make it a national historic landmark.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was very really interesting with all the people performing and the people speaking to learn the history around the site and around the Court Theatre and how that came into being. And
hopefully it encouraged people to go and have a look. What would be the dream heritage festival for you, Deborah? Like, you know, if you, obviously it will continue because it's in the plan, City Council plan for 10 years, I believe, Christchurch Heritage Festival. But what would be the one that, you know, be just like?
I suppose ideally it's that it's as inclusive as possible, so that there's a really wide range of groups and people taking part. I think that's what makes it. Successful.
Makes it, And on that note, we thank you for coming and sharing this with us. We have been cooperating for quite some time, exchanging emails for years now.
Yes, we have.
And it was good to finally share the sort of your knowledge and experience with Heritage Festival and our from the other spectrum type of thing. So, thank you for finding the time and joining us. And that was our November Reminisce on Canterbury and Christchurch Heritage Festival. Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you for having me.
Just one thing. Do you have any thoughts on what next year's theme might be?
No, not yet.
I have to have a look. I was just going to say our library hosted an event by the Antarctic Heritage Trust, Virtual Reality, and that was great. Students loved it, and in fact they want to come back again next year, so
here we are.
That was our heritage event.
Yeah, we are. So we'll all see each other next year, I suppose. Yes. And we encourage communities of all kinds to participate and get interest, because it's for us. It's about us and it's for us. So it's equally and doubly important. So thank you again, Deborah, for finding time, and much appreciated. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nowe strony zadyszamy czas. Sto dat, sto spraw wciąga nas, gna nas. Moje dni, wszechobecny pośpiech czasu zna. Znaczy, może przez to tak. Lubię, lubię wracać tam, gdzie byłem już. Pod tę barką pełen trących róż. Na uliczki te znajome tak. Do znajomych drzwi pukać myśląc, czy nie stanie w nich czasami tak.
Welcome back. As I mentioned earlier, November is a day, a month of celebrating different holidays, and one of those holidays in Poland is All Saints' Day. It's observed on the 1st of November, and as a tradition that goes beyond just mere remembrance, because in Poland this day it's not only just about honoring saints, but also about paying respect to departed loved ones. So we go to cemeteries, we lay flowers on cemeteries of our loved ones, we light candles and stuff. So very moving and very sort of nostalgic day for Poland. But here's Maria with some facts about that day, Maria.
So thank you. Yes, Dorotas, we've got in November, we have these two key celebrations, All Saints Day, which is on the 1st of November, which is already gone, and Independence Day coming up on the 11th with Tomek. We'll tell you a lot more about it. So All Saints Day is an important day in the Polish calendar. It has a deep spiritual tradition rooted in faith, community and cultural continuity. It's a day of reflection on life's transient nature and the importance of remembrance. During the week before All Saints' Day, time is spent by families going to the graves, cleaning the graves and cleaning the headstones, and getting them ready for the first. This time is so important that people will travel across the country to their hometowns to visit the cemeteries where their relatives rest. Decorative candles and flowers such as chrysanthemums are laid on the graves of their loved ones, and they gather at the grave on the first to share stories and memories. So people are coming together to reflect on their family and just remember. Afterwards, families will go home and they'll share a meal and time together. All Saints' Day dates back to the 4th century. This day was celebrated prior to Poland becoming a Christian country, and it was replaced by Pope Gregory IV as an official religious holiday in the year 835. the original pagan holiday was called Jazé, meaning forefathers. It was believed that during this time of the year, the souls of the forefathers would return to Earth to visit their family members. In early times, people would bake small loaves of bread that they would bring to the gravesite in order to feed the souls, and they would light fires along the roads and at their homes to keep warm and guide the souls to the house. There was high expectations on people to be on their best behaviour on this day so as not to be disrespectful to the visiting souls. There are three cemeteries I would like to mention. The first one, Rakovitsky Cemetery in Krakow. It's the largest and most important cemetery in the city, with many notable people being buried there, including the parents of Pope John Paul II. The next one is Zadovsky, or Jewish cemetery.
Zadovsky, yes. In Łódź.
And it was once the largest Jewish cemetery in Europe, and it was established in 1892 and contains mass graves from the Holocaust. And the last one is a cemetery in Zakopane. This cemetery is located behind an old wooden church, and unlike traditional burial sites in Poland, the memorials here are carved from rock and metal or built in the shape of tall wooden sculptures. The headstones in this cemetery are pretty much works of art that make you feel like you're in a fairyland. And when all the candles are lit and the flowers are there, it's just
magical.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm. So that's just a little bit around the 1st of November.
Yeah, you mentioned Zakopane and the wooden church. I remember when I was a little girl and we went for an excursion to Zakopane, obviously visiting because it's a highland area by the mountains, by the Tatra Mountains in Poland, down south. And I vividly remember this wooden church, which still stands, and there is a clock in that church. And underneath that clock, there is a note saying, one of your of those hours will be your last one.
Oh.
Honestly, I was a teenager then, and I vividly remember this because it just had such a simple sentence, but had such a meaning. One of those hours will be your last one. So that's, if you're in Zakopane ever and go to that wooden church, I hope it's still there, but maybe not. But there is quite a number of beautiful cemeteries around Poland, and you mentioned Krakow and Łódź as well. There's one in Warszawa as well, in Warsaw. But nevertheless, each cemetery, no matter where you are in Poland, is lit with candles on that day. And because, you know, the evenings are long and the days are short because it's autumn now, it starts sort of 4 o'clock and onwards. And it's just so beautiful. It's clean. It's a lot of flowers and a lot of candles. So if you can imagine huge areas with candles on graves. It's just one of those days when where families, as you said, travel and visit and pay respect to the loved ones. So
yes, it sounds like it's a very busy time of the year, but I can imagine it would be certainly a time of the year you'd want to go to Poland.
That's definitely one of many. So thank you, Maria.
Ile deszczów, ile śniegów, wiszących na latarniach. Ile listów, ile rozstań, ciężkich godzin w miastach wielu. I znów upór, żeby powstać, i znów iść i dojść do celu. Ile w trudzie nieustannym, wspólnych zmartwień, wspólnych dążeń. Ile chlebów rozkrajanych, pocałunków schodów książek. Oczy twe jak piękne świecie, a w sercu źródło promienie. Więc ja chciałbym twoje serce ocalić od zapomnienia.
Welcome back. In November, we also celebrate Poland's Independence Day, and here's Tom with some facts.
Thank you, Dorota. November 11th, Poland's National Independence Day, symbolizes Poland's regaining of independence after 123 years under Prussian, Russian, and Austro-Hungarian rule. It commemorates the historic event when Polish national hero Marshal Piłsudski took command of Polish forces in Poland, just as armistice ending World War I was signed in France on the same day. Initially a national holiday, it was established in 1937 and celebrated for the next 2 years. The outbreak of World War II interrupted subsequent celebrations of this holiday, and after the end of World War II, the Polish communist government forbid it altogether. Only on February 15, 1989, after political changes in Poland and the fall of communism, did the Polish parliament reinstate November 11th as National Independence Day. In today's Poland, it is a very solemnly celebrated holiday with military parades, meetings, and paying respect to all Polish heroes who died defending Poland's freedom.
That's right. November is also a very important month for the Polish legacy in New Zealand. As 81 years ago, during the height of the World War II, over 700 Polish children were invited by the New Zealand government to come and stay in a large camp south of Pahiatua, leaving behind their war-stricken country. There they started living freely and happily, finding their much-needed peace in their temporary home, with the camp being dubbed Little Poland. After the war, some moved back to Poland, some moved to other parts of New Zealand and the world, and some decided to settle in Pahiatua. On November 1st this year, in Pahiatua, the land of the resting gods, a ceremony was held to commemorate the 81st anniversary of the arrival of those children with the Poland's Ministry of Culture and National Heritage presenting the Bronze Cross of Gloria Artis for Merit to Culture to Pahiatua Museum for preserving the history between Poland and New Zealand and for all the efforts to keep this story active in our minds and in our hearts. What began as an act of compassion by New Zealand Prime Minister Peter Fraser became the foundation of a lifelong bond between our two nations. A tree was also planted in memory of one of the children who settled in Pahiatua and became a pharmacist serving the community. With those words in November, we pay tribute to all those 733 children and their caregivers, and we remember all those children that are no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
czesnoty nowy dzień. Nieskalane czyste niebo, co było wczoraj, odeszło w dzień. Niech pamięci, niech się święci.
Welcome back. As I mentioned earlier, November is also a month when Poland celebrate a very significant birthday, if I might say this. Polish National Theatre celebrates 260 years of its existence because it was established in 1765 by King Stanisław August Poniatowski. And it is the fourth oldest national theatre in Europe. Now, Stanisław August Poniatowski was the king of Poland and at a time, as time would tell, the last monarch who perceived theatre as a powerful means of public communication, an educational institution, and a political instrument aiding into the implementing reforms in the country. You can imagine it was 1765, so quite a long time ago. And he had that vision of theater being that instrument, that tool to achieve a lot for the country. He created, first of all, a permanent company of Polish actors in Warsaw, in the capital, offering a repertoire well thought out and addressed to the masses because he wanted the people of Poland to experience that. Now, with more facts on the Polish National Theatre, here's Jen.
As Dorota has mentioned, on the 19th of November 1765, the Polish players presented their first performance of Józef Bielowski's comedy The Interlopers, based on a play by Molière. Since the operatic players were the first professional company to perform in Polish, it has become a tradition to commemorate the date as that of the birth of Polish National Theatre. 2 years later, the players' activity was interrupted by political disturbances, which led to the first partition of Poland, as a result of which parts of the country's territory were annexed by its three powerful neighbours, Russia, Austria, and Prussia. A theatre bill passed in 1774 allowed the company to resume its activities. no longer boasting the title of court players. From then on, it was directed by private entrepreneurs. In 1779, the theatre acquired its own building, which was to become its permanent seat for the next 30 years. In 1825, in view of the growing dilapidation of the old building, the decision was taken to construct an entirely new theatre complex to be designed by Antonio Corazzi. Inaugurated on the 24th of February 1833, it took the name of the Grand Theatre, as opposed to being a national theatre. The reason for this was the result of the successive partitions of Poland. The eastern part of Poland, including Warsaw, was incorporated into Russia, whose rulers were unwilling to tolerate the functioning of a national Polish theatre. In the next period, 1829 to 1833, the Variety Theatre came into being, which presented light plays in the public hall of the Charitable Society building. In 1833, the Variety found shelter in the Grand Theatre's right wing and eventually moved into its own separate premises. Until 1916, the whole enterprise, known at first as Warsaw Theatres and then as Government Theatres of Warsaw, was administered by Russian officials. This period in the history of the Grand Theatre was marked, among others, by the successful succession of French plays, the appearances of Helena Modjeska, and the first performances of works by Polish playwrights. During the war years, the Korotsi building was damaged twice, first in September 1939, and then during the Warsaw Uprising of August 1944. Renovations took place and the National Theatre in Warsaw opened in 1949. The post-war fates did reflect to a large extent the major events in the history of a Soviet-dominated Poland, such themes as the so-called socialist realism, the short-lived period of relative intellectual liberty following Stalin's death in 1953, and the National Theatre's involvement in the events of 1968, when the communist leaders' decision to ban the production, The Forefather's Eve, ignited a students' revolt. And, of course, the gloomy years of the martial law in the early 1980s. Another fire occurred at the Variety Theatre on November the 2nd, 1919, less than a year after Poland regained independence. For a few years, the actors performed in the Summer Theatre's wooden building in the nearby Saxon Garden. At the same time, the reconstruction of the former Variety Theatre got underway. After 5 years, the building opened on October the 3rd, 1924, now as the National Theatre. It was separate from the opera and ballet and was not a state-run theatre. It was operated by the city authorities. And when their patronage collapsed due to an economic crisis in the 1930s, the stage was taken over by an organisation called the Society for the Promotion of Theatre Culture. Now, another unfortunate incident was that in 1939, the theatre got burned during an aerial bombing in September and was completely destroyed during the planned destruction of Warsaw carried out by the Nazis following the failure of the Warsaw Uprising in the autumn of 1944. After the end of the war, the National Theatre was rebuilt relatively quickly by military personnel, and the first post-war premiere
took place on the 13th of December 1949. In 1985, the theatre again burned down. Its reconstruction this time took 12 years and was completed only after the overthrow of the communist rule in Poland. On the 19th of November 1997, the National Theatre was reopened. Under his artistic directorship, the National Theatre has regained its traditional position of the foremost drama theatre in Poland. However, following his resignation in September 2003, Jan Englert was appointed as the new artistic director of the National Theatre in Warsaw.
He has just retired too.
Is he? Oh, yes. Right. Yes.
Yes. Very interesting. There is a lot of history and a lot of fires and everything that destroyed the theatre. But the whole idea of it, was to be available and to the people of Poland and to basically showcase the culture and our literature and everything else. So theatre is an important part of our heritage. And we had a Polish theatre group performing here, the Krasic Heritage Festival, speaking of which we were just talking about.
Yes,
it was 2 years ago.
Yes,
they came from Sydney and performed for us. It was important for us to actually showcase and also show the theatre group and Polish theatre group to the community here in Christchurch. I think it was quite well received. So thank you, Jen. That was a bit on National Theatre. Thank you.
So when they rebuilt it after each of these fires, was it rebuilt on the same site or on different sites?
I think it possibly might have changed because it's made up of sort of different groups of the performing arts.
That's a lot of bad luck with all those fires.
They had five fires.
Five? Wow.
Yes. And they've risen from the ashes.
Quite five times. Amazing.
It looks amazing. The building is quite amazing now. So once again, if you travel in Poland, Warsaw is the place to visit, and our theatre would be probably one of the places to have a look, at least on the outside, if you can't get in, but definitely worth seeing. So here it is, Theatre it was, National Day, 260 years of existence.
Goodbye. You are listening to Polish Waves on Plains Media.
Look us up on Facebook, Polish Legacy in New Zealand.
And please join us again next month on December 12th at 8 p.m.
Do usłyszenia!